I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thanks for listening to the Primetime with Isaac and Souk. I'm Souk, by the way. Podcast brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center, doing the right thing since 1952.
Ah, cute.
It's 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock.
I'm talking about the game. The mental game, you know, la cabeza, you don't got it.
The rough is extra thick this week.
All you're trying to do is to punch it back into the fairway. Yeah. That's it. You have no expectations, and you fail.
This is Primetime on the Fans U.S. Open Week.
Brought to you by Area Heating and Cooling. Don't wait for comfort with Area Heating and Cooling. Go to areaheating.com today, your local train comfort specialists. It's hard to stop a train.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk on 1080.
Small lumber, I own 2 lumber yards.
The Fan.
It is U.S. Open Week. No Isaac Robb. He's out with the sniffles today, or diarrhea, or the HIV. I don't know. Rob's got something going on. He thought it was strep throat. Turns out it wasn't strep, but he did the, hey, I'm going to try to tough it out, which means no, he's not going to show up. But he said that
trying to tough it out would mean he would show up.
I know. Like, he sent us that text message at like 1 o'clock. He's like, guys, going to the doctor, see if I can power through. And we knew at that point he wasn't powering through. So Rob is out today. And then on the injury report tomorrow, I'm going to say doubtful. He claimed that he could be back tomorrow, but again, we're going to list him as doubtful for Thursday. Maybe upgrade him to probable for Friday, although
I'm going questionable for tomorrow.
You're going questionable?
I'm going questionable for tomorrow.
Okay, see, I'm officially putting it as doubtful because it's the start of the U.S. Open. So what's going to happen is Rob's going to wake up, and he'll start watching golf, and he'll just be like, yeah, I don't know, man, it's...
I kind of want to watch the U.S. Open.
Kind of want to watch the U.S. Open. Maybe he has a morning Bloody Mary. I'm still going to say doubtful. Probable for a return on Friday. And then he'll be fine by Saturday because we're playing Chambers Bay on Saturday.
How are you going to play up there? How do you think you're going to play, I mean?
I'm just trying to get under 100. I haven't played that much this year. Rob plays like 9 times a week. I played a little bit at the start of the year, but I'll bet you it's been... It's probably been a month since I last went out. I hit some golf balls maybe a couple weeks ago, but I have not played that much this year. So if I break 100, I'll be pleased. I'll set the over-under at like 90. I'll go 95.
Okay.
Is my over.
And Chamber, I mean, it's supposed to be a really difficult course though, right?
Rob said it's not that bad.
Okay. Like Rob said that, who plays 9 times a week.
Well, Rob's like a 3. I don't know. But Rob's played with me before. I don't know. He just said it wasn't that bad. It's my first time actually going up there, and this is through we did the Special Olympics thing. Someone won. For whatever reason, someone wanted to play golf with Rob, and then somehow I'm coming along. I'm assuming they just wanted to play with Rob, and then I'll drive the golf cart. But we'll get out there. We'll hack it up.
Okay.
See what happens. Maybe we'll put together a better round than anticipated. It's like my words per minute. I wasn't expecting much, and I didn't really achieve much, but it was better than I thought.
Okay.
So maybe we shoot.
So if you hit around a 98, you'll be happy.
Yeah, anything under 100.
Okay.
Right? And normally when I go out and play, if I'm anywhere in the high 80s, that's a successful round for me.
I'm going to be very interested on Monday to hear how both of you played.
Oh, yeah. People are saying you walk chambers, no cards. I'm playing 9 holes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's really hilly too, right?
I'm playing 9 holes, then I'm sitting down.
Maybe laying down after too much to drink.
I don't like playing 18 holes. Like I need
it probably hurts, right?
Yeah. By the time I get done, like my knees and my back and my neck, shoulders, it doesn't feel good. I need like golf, like a la carte, where I get to play, like I get to pay by a hole. Because 9 is probably not quite enough, but 18 is way too many.
You want to get up to like 11 and be like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. 11 to 12 is my sweet spot. Because I'll get to 9, and I always have that internal debate of, hey, should I play the back? And then if I do decide to play, I'm like, oh, yeah, let's play the back. By hole 12, I don't want to be playing anymore. And by 13, 14, it's right out.
You're just going, oh, let me just hit the ball.
15, 16, 17, 18, zero effort on my part whatsoever. You're lucky if I'm even putting out at that point. I don't even care. I'll drop one of you. Hey, you guys just go ahead. I'm going to stay in the cart. Just it's not a comfortable round for me when we get into those back. So that's the other thing that skews my scores is even if I'm playing well on the front nine, it will disintegrate on the back because A, stuff starts to hurt and my focus just goes straight to hell. So what we need to do is say like my front nine at Chambers, 45 to like 46 will be the goal. And okay, then whatever happens on the back nine, I could give a, you know what, I may not finish the back nine. All right, let's get to the hot five at five.
Oh, hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, darling, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
Refreshed by Frostbrewed Coors Light. Download the reward app and start earning points towards one-of-a-kind experiences, game tickets, and rewards.
Number five.
We'll throw a little curveball here. We'll go boxing at number five. Triple G and Canelo Alvarez have finalized a deal for their rematch. They are saying this is the biggest fight in boxing, generated over right around a million and a half pay-per-views. The last time they fought, it was a controversial draw. Most people thought Triple G won that fight. But they're saying that this was scheduled for earlier in the year. And remember, Alvarez tested positive for a performance-enhancing substance. And I guess it turned out it was tainted meat that he had eaten. And they said that's actually what happened. But he still, the fight was called off. But they have scheduled it for September 15th. And for you boxing fans out there, that is the biggest fight now. Those are the two biggest names in the sport. And the first one was an entertaining fight. So hopefully we get a little more of the same, but with actually a winner this time around on September 15th. The fight will take place in Vegas.
Number four.
The red-hot Seattle Mariners swept the Angels. Now, I would like to say that I saw this, but I didn't because it was on freaking Facebook Live. It was 6-6 going into the eighth. Ryan Healy with a home run to tie it up for the M's. We go to flip over to Root to watch it, and sure enough, Sport Fishing is on. Because apparently this is one of those stupid Facebook-only games that you can only watch on that. So 40,000 people got to see it, and no one else did. But Mitch Haniger actually hit a walk-off home run. And the red-hot Seattle Mariners, what, the third-best record in Major League Baseball? I think 22-7 now since Robinson Cano went out. I mean, they are red, stinking hot.
I did see somewhere that Jerry DePoto said that it would either crush the clubhouse or galvanize the clubhouse, and I suppose it galvanized it.
Yeah, I mean, you sweep the Angels, and now you've got big ones. You got Red Sox, Yankees. Red Sox are your next handful of series. Obviously, Boston and New York, by the way, the two teams with a better record than Seattle. So, huge couple series coming up.
Number three.
Speaking of, I'm going to stick with baseball here because I saw this and I thought it was kind of sad news. Miguel Cabrera done for the year with a torn bicep. And, you know, he's 35 years old. And Cabrera to me is maybe the most underappreciated star of my lifetime in baseball. When you look at his numbers, and the guy won the Triple Crown and yet is kind of viewed as an afterthought, but he's 35 years old. And if he stays healthy, he could easily get to the 3,000 hits, 500 home run club. But you start to wonder at 35, and look, he has declined a little bit, and that torn bicep. Are we getting real close to the end of Miguel Cabrera? And if we do, think about when he burst on the scene with that first Marlin World Series when he was a rookie and just how good he was, and just doesn't get the appreciation that I think he should deserve. But Miguel Cabrera done for the year with a torn bicep.
Number two.
The NCAA with a couple, I would say, decent pieces of news today. They've put in two new policies, I should say. You're now going to be able to play in up to four games without having to burn a red shirt. I think this one is actually pretty smart. You see it all the time where a kid comes in because of injury, maybe a backup quarterback, and has to play a game or two, and an entire year is wasted. You're now going to be able to play up to four of those games, not have to apply for a red shirt. I think that makes common sense. And kids can now apply for a transfer without the school's permission. They'll be able to put themselves into a national database, where that will go out. So basically after they inform their coaches that they're going to be transferring, that name will go onto a national wire, and then that kid can contact those schools, which is good. I actually would hope that eventually we get to the point where a kid can transfer once without having to sit out for a penalty. I think ultimately that's where the NCAA needs to go, but I think some of the pressure being applied to the NCAA, because people are starting to view just how unfair the system is towards the kids, they're having to ease up on the rules a little bit. I think these are two moves in the right direction.
Number one.
Two pieces of news in number one. We're going to combine this. The U.S. Open gets underway tomorrow. In fact, we'll talk to Action Network's Jason Sobel here at 5:30. Get you caught up on everything you know about the U.S. Open that starts tomorrow. I think about 5 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I think some of the first groups do go off. And one of the last groups to go off in the first round is Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson.
Justin Thomas.
I don't know why I was getting those two names confused.
They're pretty similar.
Pretty similar. And Tiger Woods. And that'll be one of the last groups that will go off. I think that tees off right around 10:30 in the morning. And then the World Cup gets underway tomorrow. And then obviously the U.S. not being in the World Cup. But the big news that came down today is North America, which was headed by the United States, won the bid for the 2026 World Cup. And most of that will be in the United States. It was a joint venture, and it's the first time they've done this with a joint venture, but Canada, Mexico, and the United States will be held in North America. But 60 of the 80 games will be played in the United States, including all of the matches from the quarterfinals upward. And then Canada and Mexico will host 10 games apiece. The finals are expected to be played in MetLife Stadium, obviously just outside of New York. And then there were 25 cities that were listed as potential host sites for the various games. And I think that's going to be pared down to 16. Portland obviously didn't make the cut. They don't have a stadium big enough, but Seattle did. So hopefully Seattle can get some of those games in 2026, and we will have a chance to drive just a couple hours and maybe check out what the World Cup has to offer. Let's see here. Hot 5 at 5 brought to you by, Frost Brewed Coors Light. Download Coors Light's new rewards app and start earning points towards one-of-a-kind experiences and game tickets. We touched upon the World Cup at the start of the program. Maybe we delve back into that a little bit. So a little soccer and some golf. We got some Major League Baseball news and notes, NCAA, NFL stuff, even maybe some LeBron stuff if we have time. But
I think you gotta throw me a little bone and give me a little baseball news and notes before we get to the club.
We can do that.
Just let's especially because the hot corners tonight, little pub.
There you go.
7 and 9, so we can lead into that a little bit.
So plenty of stuff to get to here in the final hour before we get to Club 1080 primetime here on The Fan.
This is a U.S. Open Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Brought to you by Area Heating and Cooling.
On 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back in. Jason Sobel of the Action Sports Network, formerly of ESPN, joins us here in about 10, 15 minutes. Talk about the U.S. Open out at Shinnecock Hills that gets underway tomorrow. Also, some Major League Baseball talk. We'll throw that in for Mike Lynch. Also, some news from a national baseball writer today. Who says that he thinks Portland is number one as far as the expansion cities go. I'm telling you, the more that this thing goes on, I'm convinced we're going to get a baseball team in Portland. And this just feels different than any other time. And I know we're going to talk soccer here, but now you've got me on a baseball thing, so I'm just going to go with it.
I haven't said a word. You got yourself on the baseball thing.
No, you said before that.
The break, I told you, by the way, I don't know if you saw what Jason Stark said.
You started it. Now I'm all geeked up and the Mariners are good and all that. So, hell, I'm going to run with it.
Okay.
It's going downhill. We talked enough soccer in the first hour anyways, right? World Cup's coming here. Wake me up in 10 years when it gets here.
All right.
So Jason Stark had an article today where he talked about a lot of things. In fact, he talked about like when Major League Baseball does expand, kind of a radical approach, kind of a shift. Hockey did this, in fact, a couple years back where they basically just went to geography. I mean, he's talking about maybe not even having an American National League. It was one of the things he proposed, that it just ends up being more of a kind of a universal melting pot as far as baseball goes. But as far as it speaks to you in Portland, he talked about Major League Baseball will expand to 32 teams. And when they do that, then he got into some of the radical realignment stuff and maybe the DH, you know, being involved in both sides now, because it would, you do away with the National and American League and become, you know, a regional sort of thing. But to me, it was more interesting that this is a national guy who said what I've kind of been feeling all along, that when you talk about expansion cities, because to me, it's become pretty evident at this point that I expansion to me is more likely in Portland than either team moving. So the two teams that are supposedly up to be moved, the A's and the Rays. Baseball doesn't move. The last team that moved was the Expos. And before that, it just, I don't even know who the team that moved before that. It's just baseball doesn't want teams to move. That is going to be the last option on the table. And I think Tampa will get a deal done before the A's do. At least it feels like there's at least some positive momentum there, maybe somewhere down in the St. Pete area. The A's, you know, possibly on the same site. But with the Raiders leaving Oakland, I can't imagine Major League Baseball wants to remove another team from Oakland, because Golden State is moving across the river.
They're technically leaving Oakland, right?
They're technically leaving Oakland. The Oracle of whatever it's going to be is now going to be in San Francisco. It's not going to be in Oakland. It's going to be over by AT&T Park, right on the water. The Raiders in a couple years are gone. They're moving to Vegas. And you're telling me Major League Baseball is going to take baseball out of Oakland? I don't buy it. So there's a real notion that expansion is the way to go. And Stark talks about that, that Major League Baseball will expand to 32 teams. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And this is something that I felt all along that he pointed out, of the cities that get thrown out. So Montreal is one. Charlotte is another one. Mexico City is one that gets thrown around quite a bit.
Nashville.
And then you get Portland. And he said it. He goes, of all those cities, Portland is the one with their act most together. And so you look at the fact that, and I was kind of digging around this morning when I saw that, when I saw the article that Stark said that, and I started looking around trying to find articles about each one of these cities and kind of what they were doing as far as Major League Baseball. You know how many I found? None.
Really?
I didn't find one article that talked about stadium proposal. I didn't see one article that talked about ownership groups. And I get that maybe here in Portland, we don't have a definitive plan, obviously, for a stadium. We don't know everything about it.
But there's steps being taken.
But there's steps being taken. There's things that we're talking about. Articles have been written. And I thought that's why it was such a brilliant move with the whole Russell Wilson, Sierra?
Yep.
Sierra,
correct.
You know, that got some national attention. It got some people to look at that and say, okay, not only do you have Russell Wilson and his smoke show of a wife that have decided to join in this, but you're actually able to take a look at it and be like, oh yeah, Portland is putting in active bids. Like we have two bids already on baseball sites. And you look at that group that Barrett has and that he's a part of, we may not know all the money behind it, but that's a group that isn't kidding around. They are going to buy a piece of land. And once that land is purchased, they are going to build a stadium on it. So you start looking around at Montreal, you look at Nashville, you look at Mexico City, none of them have that. So to me, you don't commit these sorts of resources to this project without, I'm not going to say that there was a guarantee made, but without a real feeling. And I think that behind the scenes, I think Major League Baseball has given them the thumbs up. I really feel that in my heart of hearts, that Major League Baseball has told them, if you can get a stadium built, you will get a team one way or another. And I still think we're going to be used as leverage for Oakland and for Tampa. I absolutely think that that's going to happen, that they're going to look at Oakland and they're going to look at Tampa and say, get your act together, because Portland's going to have a stadium built in 2022, maybe 23. And you have up until then to get it together. And if you don't, hey, there's a market for you.
And I think for me with this, this is what we've kind of bandied about before, but seeing someone like Jason Stark, who to me is probably top three most respected baseball writers out there.
Yes.
The guy knows his stuff. He's all over the place. He's on The Athletic now. He's on MLB Network. He's really, really good. And I tried to get him on the show today, but he said he was way too slammed to do anything, of course. But the fact that he said this wasn't based on necessarily information. He said, based on my journalistic researching, here's who I think are the top 10 chances to get an expansion team, and he put Portland number one. I was expecting Montreal number one, to be honest. He put Portland number one. I went, wow. So one of the top guys, in my opinion, just said that Portland has the best chance to get an expansion team. This is after the Russell Wilson Sierra news came out that got it national headlines, like you're saying. We've had all this local momentum, and now it's turning into national momentum, and now it's going to people who, at least for me, and I think a lot of baseball fans
respect,
out there,
right?
You respect and you trust, and you're going, well, because I think for a lot of us, there's something in the back of our head where you're waiting for the shoe to drop, and there's going to be, like, the rug's going to get pulled out from under you, and it's going to be the same thing that's happened in the past. And every time something like this happens, that worry becomes less and less and becomes smaller and smaller.
I will not forget sitting down with Mike Barrett and just simply asking him, do you feel if you guys can get land and build a stadium, will you get a team? Yes. And they're not committing those sorts of resources, I think, just on a lark. And nothing about them says that they are stopping, right? They put in two bids on the sites. They have a third one that they're proposing, and they've said that, hey, even if we can't get it built in the city, we have other options. That money isn't an issue. I mean, they're already into this thing for tens of millions of dollars. I'm going to stop short of saying that it's going to happen because, I mean, who knows, right? There's a million different factors to it, but I feel really good. And today was another one of those steps when I read Stark's article that Major League Baseball to Portland, I think it's okay to say that it's not a pipe dream. It's not a reality yet. And there's many things that can happen. And we've had Maury Brown on a couple different times, and he says that it's obviously a long road and we're many years away from it. I'm confident. I really am. And that to me, of all the years that I've lived here in the city and the 15 years I've been doing this show, is as excited about something as I think I've ever been with the prospect of Major League Baseball coming to Portland. So maybe some good news today, as Jason Stark said, that he puts Portland number one of his cities that are in line to maybe get Major League Baseball expansion. All right, we come back. U.S. Open starts tomorrow. Jason Sobel of the Action Sports Network, formerly of ESPN, joins us to talk all things golf.
This is a U.S. Open Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Brought to you by Area Heating and Cooling.
On 1080 The Fan.
The U.S. Open gets underway tomorrow morning. I think right around 5 o'clock Pacific, you can see some of the groups that go off. Joining us now from the Action Network, you can find him actionnetwork.com, or you can follow him on Twitter. Jason Sobel joins us at Jason Sobel, TAN. Jason, thanks for taking a couple minutes for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Can't wait for this week to finally get started. It's going to be a fun week here at Shinnecock.
Now, the last time we saw the U.S. Open there, to say that the course played hard is an understatement. Number seven was basically deemed unplayable. They were watering the green in between, you know, golfers coming through. How is the course set up, and is it going to be blood and carnage, or are we going to see something, maybe a kinder, gentler Shinnecock Hills?
I won't say that it's set up easy, because it's not, but I'm not so sure that this is the USGA setup that everyone wants to see. I mean, we enjoy watching a tough test of golf. We collectively assume that the U.S. Open will be the hardest golf tournament of the year, and even par something right around there will win the golf tournament. I don't know that that's going to happen this year. The fairways are in some places twice as wide as they were in 2004 when the tournament was held here. The green complexes are still tough, but players hit it so much further now than they did even just 14 years ago that I think some good scores are going to be had. And I've had some players suggest to me that even double digits under par could win this golf tournament.
Does the USGA want to see that?
I think the USGA is playing scared right now. I think the USGA is being a little too cautious. They've had some train wrecks over the last few years, going back to 2004, quite frankly, where Executive Director Mike Davis called that a double bogey recently and said they want to make amends for it. 3 years ago, they went to Chambers Bay. Didn't quite work out the way they wanted to. It wasn't quite ready for a major championship. Last year at Erin Hills, the winning score was 16 under par. It was a great PGA championship if you're into that. I love the PGA Championship. I just don't love it during U.S. Open week, and that's kind of what it turned into. And I think the USGA right now is sort of scared of the criticism from players, the criticism from fans. They don't want to embarrass the players anymore out of fear of, I don't know what, maybe the players stop going to the year's second major championship, although I'm not sure that would actually ever happen. But they are very fearful and cautious of the criticism. And so I think they've scaled back. And this golf course now is not as tough as it could possibly be. And that's why I think we're going to see some good scores.
Well, and does that have something to do with the parents? I know traditionally the U.S. Open, you know, has said that, you know, you watch because of the U.S. Open, but you look at some of these pairings on what well, the first 2 days, and apparently someone at the U.S. GA wants people to put their eyeballs on it because there are some really interesting groups.
Well, and that's sort of been the in thing to do over the last couple of years. PGA Tour with their live streaming feeds wants to get people watching these featured groups, and the USGA has sort of followed suit and tried to get all the big names together. It's almost a game of can you top this with all the officials trying to figure out the absolute best fairings and what's going to get the biggest names playing together. So, yeah, we've got Tiger Woods playing with Justin Thomas and Dustin Johnson, the top two ranked players in the world. We've got Jordan Spieth with Phil Mickelson and Rory McIlroy. They've kind of bunched them together. But, yes, there are some very specific reasons for that, and that is because there is so much online traffic to be had with the live streaming feeds that can follow those groups individually that they want to capitalize on it.
We're talking to Jason Sobel of the Action Network. You can find him on Twitter at Jason Sobel, T-A-N. You mentioned that, you know, maybe someone would be able to take this, you know, possibly double digits. And the way this course is set up, everything I've been reading is it's favoring the Bombers right now. And you just mentioned the top two players in the world sitting there with Justin Thomas and Dustin Johnson. You know, is this set up for these two guys to, you know, to be there maybe as the final pairing when we go into Sunday?
I think that's probably looking a little too far ahead. But, yeah, I do like both of them a lot. In fact, Justin Thomas is the guy who wound up atop my ranking when I ranked the entire 156-man field on ActionNetwork.com. And I think his game is ready for this. Ever since winning the PGA Championship last August, he's finished outside the top 25 just once. So he's very consistent, contends an awful lot of golf tournaments. I think he's going to be a good U.S. Open player for a long time. And like you said, this is going to set up for the big hitters. I truly believe that guys like Justin Thomas and Dustin Johnson are going to be able to have wedges into some of these greens, or at least eight irons into some of the greens, whereas shorter hitters may hit a few more fairways, but they're going to struggle to hit many of these greens with longer clubs going in. I think it's going to play a big factor.
Well, I saw today on your website, in fact, that we have not had a favorite win the U.S. Open in 10 years since Tiger limped around at Torrey Pines. So Dustin Johnson being the favorite, we can just eliminate him from contention, right?
Right, and I'll give you another reason. No player has ever won on the PGA Tour the week before the U.S. Open and then gone on to win the U.S.
Hey,
Open.
He's done.
So, he's got a couple of strikes against him this week, even though he is the top player in the world.
When you look at Dustin Johnson and just kind of what an absolute freak athlete he is, and obviously, I mean, it's not that he hasn't been successful, but maybe not the success of other people. Is he one of those guys that you look at as talented he is? Believe it or not, has he underperformed with the level of talent
no.
he has?
No, no way. I can't say that. He's won 18 times on the PGA Tour. If Dustin Johnson never wins again, I still think he goes into the World Golf Hall of Fame someday. Others with less credentials than him have gotten into the hall. So, no, I think he's been remarkably consistent. I mean, we think of Dustin Johnson being an aggressive player and a guy who goes through hot streaks and cold streaks. That's the tendency of these big hitters to sort of have peaks and valleys, and yet he's won in every single season he's been a PGA Tour professional. That's pretty remarkable going back to his rookie season. So, no, I don't think he's underachieved. He's a guy that maybe hasn't necessarily played his best golf at the major championships. But again, he's 33 years old. He's still got plenty of time if he's going to clip off a few more of these. And quite frankly, the fields are so deep right now that you really can't name a player who is peeling off a bunch of major championships. I mean, Jordan Spieth has three of them in the last 3.5 years. Rory McIlroy has four, but hasn't won one in a while. There really isn't anybody out there. It's almost like a turnstile at the deli. Everyone takes a ticket and grabs their trophy and walks through the turnstile, and the next guy comes up and gets his the next time.
Yeah, it's like everyone in the NBA, right, chases Michael Six. It's like such an unrealistic expectation, and now, you know, it's like the Tiger factor, right? If you're not reeling off 10 of these in an 8 or 9 year period, then you get that label of, well, you were supposed to be the next Tiger Woods, and you're not.
Nobody is going to be the next Tiger Woods. And if we're still searching for that, we need to look elsewhere. Quite frankly, the next Tiger Woods is Dustin Johnson, and it's Justin Thomas, and it's Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler. It's all of these guys collectively put together. That's what the next Tiger Woods is. It's this entire generation of younger players who are going to be really good for a really long time and add up major championships together. But no one is going to reach 14. No one's going to break Jack Nicklaus's record of 18. It's just not going to happen with the fields being as deep as they are these days.
Is it the deepest field that you can remember since you've been covering the sport?
I think so. Maybe not this tournament specifically, just because the open nature, the democratic nature of a U.S. Open has so many qualifiers. This week we have 78 players who are here on an exemption and 78 players who actually qualified through a sectional. So it's dead split even. So you don't get as good a field as you do at, say, the Players' Championship a few weeks ago, or even the PGA Championship in 2 months. So it's not the greatest field this week, but as far as overall the depths of fields in general on the PGA Tour, yeah, absolutely. The younger guys keep getting better and better. These are guys who are learning to win. They're basically mini tour pros when they're 14, 15, 16 years old, traveling the country, traveling the world, playing in big-time junior golf tournaments that they're basically coming out of college, coming out of junior golf, ready to go to the PGA Tour and ready to win on the PGA Tour.
We're talking to Jason Sobel, senior golf writer, the Action Network. You can find him at theactionnetwork.com. Does Tiger play a role in this? And you look into your crystal ball. Is he sniffing around here on Sunday?
I don't know that he's necessarily sniffing around the lead, but I don't think he's going to be slamming the trunk on Friday afternoon either. I see it as just another step forward in the process for Tiger. I have him in my ranking 18th this week, which I think would be a very fair finish. I don't know that anyone would look at Tiger finishing somewhere in the top 20 and say, oh man, he really should have done a lot better. We've seen all aspects of his game be very good at any certain point. He's driven it well at times. He's had tremendous ball striking rounds at times. He's shown great wedge work. He is really putted well at times, although 2 weeks ago in his last start at the Memorial Tournament, he looked terrible with the flat stick in his hand. But he's done everything well at different events, but he hasn't put it all together yet. And I just don't believe that 5 years after his last victory, he's ready to go to your U.S. Open and make that his next one. I just think that there's got to be something else as a buffer in between. He's got to learn how to win again, and maybe that comes at a Quicken Loans National, at a Northern Trust, at a tournament like that where he can go out and win against maybe not a great field, and at least get that feeling back before going to win a major again.
Okay, I know I got to cut you loose here, but give me the quick Sobel power rankings of who you like in this thing, and then maybe a sleeper, maybe a dark horse.
I like Justin Thomas, as I mentioned before. He's my guy to win this week. I think he's ready to go out and win a second major championship. Jason Day, I really like this week as well. And if I can keep going chalk, guys that weren't necessarily as high on my ranking, but as the week is wearing on, Jordan Spieth seemed very confident to me. Ricky Fowler seems like he's really got his head on straight this week. He just got engaged at the beginning of the week here on Long Island, so I think he's got some good vibes going. As far as the long shot, I'm going to give you a couple of them real quick. Tommy Fleetwood, a guy maybe some American fans don't know much about, but ranked 12th in the world. Mark Leishman, Patrick Cantlay, Tony Finau, all guys I expect to be on the leaderboard.
Jason, thanks for taking a couple moments for us. You can find him on actionnetwork.com or follow him on Twitter, Jason Sobel, TAN. Thank you so much, Jason.
You got it. Thanks. Enjoy the tournament.
And by the way, if you're wondering, it is going to, if you're looking for some of the notable groups, so this is Eastern Standard. So Pacific here at 4:40 in the morning. Bubba Watson, Jason Day, and Brooks Koepka, they We had phone issues there.
Yeah, instead of dropping the call, you locked it in.
But I wanted to keep him on.
Yeah, forever.
Keep talking to Sobel. You can't leave, Sobel. So if you want to wake up at 4:40 in the morning, you can see that group. Some other notables at 5 a.m., you'll get Rory, Phil, Spieth go off at 5:02 a.m. What do you got? Ricky Fowler, Matsuyama, Leishman there, another underdog that he said that's at about 5:15. And then kind of the feature group. So this would be, what, 1:47 Eastern? So what was that? We have Pacific. We've got, what, 11:45, 11:47. Tiger Woods, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson. So if you want to wake up at the crack of dawn there, the U.S. Open, we'll be waiting for you. All right, we come back. One final segment. Maybe we squeeze in some soccer or maybe another MLB note. We'll have a short little segment there, and then we move on to Club 1080. Primetime here on The Fan.
This is a U.S. Open Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Brought to you by Area Heating and Cooling.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, went a little long there with Sobel previewing the U.S. Open.
Shocking.
I know. It happens. We have guests.
Look, I need to throw this out, and maybe I can read it in the club, but if you'd rather read it yourself, I did quote tweet it on Twitter at MikeLynch27. This guy says he's claiming that he forced a bot to watch over 1,000 hours of Olive Garden commercials and then asked it to write an Olive Garden commercial of its own.
We will do this in the club. You need to read this because it's freaking glorious.
Even if it's not a bot, even if the guy is just a comedy writer and he wrote it in the voice of a bot, this is the funniest thing I've seen in days. Yeah,
it's well played. And we'll talk about this. And I'm going to come to the defense of the Olive Garden.
That's a really hard fight to win.
It is. I understand. Look.
And look, you're not going to get any support from me because you know how I feel about the Olive Garden.
And this is what I'm going to talk about. You and Rob. The Olive Garden is not good. I'm not going to try to say that the Olive Garden is good.
I'm glad you're not going to try to say that.
But it does not deserve the shame and scorn that you and Rob give it.
You sure about that?
Yes. We'll talk about it.
Are you really, really sure about that?
But I want to get it. This would be my final story.
All right. We'll read it in the club. But you can still look on Twitter, too.
Yes. Because I love making fun of Mike Francesa. You know Mike Francesa is back, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Number one. He's like the sports radio god.
Have you seen that they have forced him to first tweet and B, have an app of his own?
Yes. He's so out of touch. This is the guy, by the way, if you don't know, he's on the W Fan out there in New York. And he's probably the most famous or most, I don't know, he was like the first. Mike and the Mad Dog, right? They kind of invented sports talk radio, but he's like 1,000 years old. He falls asleep during interviews. He has no idea what the hell he's talking about. He hasn't cared in 20 years. He retired or was forced to retire. And then he decided, no, I'm coming back. And then he forced his way back onto The Fan. And I guess everyone there freaking hates him. Well, listen to this. So they were talking about gambling, which has been obviously a popular topic, especially back there in New Jersey. So realize that, and by the way, this is not satire. This is Mike Francesa actually thinking that he has come up with this idea. And I'm going to read you verbatim what Mike Francesa said on his program today.
Oh, boy.
Now, if the states are smart, they'll talk to people who really understand this stuff. And they'll create games that would attract people. Now, if I created a game that plays into your football or basketball or baseball expertise, and you could say for $20 or $50 in total, have a chance to win big money depending on how you play it, that would be an exciting play for you. I think you could create something where the payoffs are not a dollar and not a dream like a lottery, where the odds are you've got a better chance of getting hit by lightning, but that if you have skill, I could create 10 games in 15 minutes if you gave me 15 minutes to do it. And if those games were created properly, they'd be very enticing to the public. Let's say I created a game where you got to pick 5 players tonight in the major leagues. And if your 5 players based on the numeric totals of any other 5 players, you win $50,000 and the fee is like $10 to get in, people would buy into that. They would play it like crazy. Starting to sound familiar, anybody? Mike Francesa just created DraftKings. Are you effing kidding me?
He didn't create DraftKings. He bumbled his way through a description that makes literally zero sense for 90% of it. And then at the end goes, it's like fantasy. He didn't create DraftKings. He created fantasy football.
Holy hell. How does he not know that he just described the exact model of DraftKings?
Well, look, He's old. He retired. He's back because he was bored and probably hates his wife. And what is he supposed to know? This is Al Albuquerque all over again.
I've got this idea. Follow me on this one, guys. It's going to sound a little crazy. But what we do is we have these things called computers. Mm. And then what
What is a computer, Jason?
I don't know. I'm not a detail man. Okay. I'm a broad thinker.
Okay.
But I've heard of these computers.
There's a screen and there's a box.
Yeah.
Got it.
And instead of waiting to get your information from a magazine or like a newspaper, what if all the information was available to you all at once? And you just paid a small fee. And then you got whatever information you want. I bet people would buy that like crazy.
Mm.
How is this guy still on the air?
Look, Suk, I think we're going to need to run with that idea. We're going to make billions.
The best part is that DraftKings on Twitter put up the clip from his show because it's on TV.
Yeah.
And then they just put, sounds familiar, and then did the thinking face emoji. Are you kidding me? Mike Francesa. Let's say I create a game where you pick five players tonight in the major leagues, and if your five players, based on numeric totals, are better than anyone else's five players, you win $50,000, and the fee is $10 to get in. It's like he stole that from DraftKings.com. Like, if you went to DraftKings.com and there was a summary on how to play, that's what Mike Francesa said today on his program.
They would say, you could pick as little as five players, $10 entry fee, you could win big.
Wow. He is unbelievable.
He is one of a kind.
Between falling asleep during interviews, not understanding anything about what he's talking about, and apparently creating fantasy sports just off the top of his head. Bravo, Mike Francesa. I don't know what we did without you. Bravo. Are we come back, Club 1080. We're going to have to talk about, what's the best way to put it? Checkout lines at supermarkets.
Okay.
Are you ever embarrassed about what you have in line? Do you ever think about the specific items that you are putting on the conveyor belt?
No, because I really don't care. But I can also add the checkout story I had from Target once where I got stuck behind a couponer, an extreme couponer.
Because I saw something today that blew my mind. Yep. I was a little embarrassed about my four items, and then I saw the lady behind me, and I felt much, much better about my items. And Mike apparently eviscerates the Olive Garden because big jerk.
Let's not sell it incorrectly. I am going to read to you what a bot allegedly wrote as an Olive Garden commercial, and it is very funny.
That you support because you're a hate monger towards the Olive Garden.
Well, I am also a hate monger towards the Olive Garden.
Family friendly, decent Italian food?
No. Stop. No.
Club 1080 when we come back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.